And so my third year, I interviewed and got the position that I have now with the Office of the Legal Advisor at the Department of State. For those of you who don't know, every federal government agency handles their legal offices a little differently. At the Department of State, it's one centralized office. 99% of our attorneys are in Washington, D.C. We have a few outlying positions, two in Geneva, two in The Hague, one in New York at the UN. And so most of the attorneys are in Washington, and they all sit together. Some agencies have attorneys sit with the client bureaus within the department, the policymakers. State Department has us all sit together, and we're divided up into sections. And the sections roughly mirror the way the State Department's broken up. So, for example, the section I'm in now is the Office of the Legal Advisor for Human Rights and Refugees. And our primary clients are the bureaus that handle human rights and refugee issues. So the Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights and Labor, and the Bureau of Populations, Refugees and Migration. That said, we, of course, will advise on any anyone within the department, be they at a post overseas or in Washington, when these issues come up. Other divisions are Legal Advisor for Consular Affairs, the Office of the Legal Advisor for Nuclear Nonproliferation, and there are also more administrative, Office of the Legal Advisor for Employment Law and Ethics, Office of the Legal Advisor for Buildings and Acquisitions. They're the folks that negotiate all of the leases for all of our embassies and consulates, all the purchasing of land for our embassies and consulates around the world. And then there are also regional sections of the Office of the Legal Advisor. So there's the Office of the Legal Advisor for Western Hemisphere Affairs, for African Affairs. And the way that the office works is when you accept a position with the Office of the Legal Advisor. So you don't know which of these sections you may end up in. And you really have no choice about your first section. So often you start in a more administrative area. I started in employment law and ethics. And then after 2 years, you're eligible to rotate. And that's usually how it works for the rest of your career if you stay within the Office of the Legal Advisor. It's a rotating basis. Once you get into an office, if it's an office you really like, you can stay longer than 2 years. But the idea is that attorneys will rotate to several different sections throughout their career. And part of the logic behind this is to make sure that the attorneys are, while there is some specialization, that there are more generalists, that institutional knowledge does not get completely encapsulated in one person. So if they retire, we still have a breadth of knowledge at the department to advise. I am currently in, as I said, the section on human rights and refugee law, and I've been in this section for almost 4 years now. Our section advises on the whole breadth of those issues. We advise on the policy of policymakers in terms of where they should be advocating based on international human rights vis-a-vis other countries, what other countries' international human rights obligations are, and how we can press them to comply with it. We advise on our own international obligations, both as the Department of State and how we implement them, but also other agencies and how they implement them. We review legislation to see how it complies with our obligations. We work with the Department of Justice on their arguments in court on legal matters dealing with international law. We also represent the department, as Dina mentioned, in international organizations. So, for example, the Human Rights Council. Some of you may know that the Human Rights Council is an organ of the United Nations that was created in 2006, to replace what was the Human Rights Commission, which had become a discredited body. And so there were negotiations within the UN General Assembly to create a new body. And in March 2006, the General Assembly adopted a resolution that dissolved the Human Rights Commission and created the Human Rights Council. The last U.S. administration at first took a wait-and-see approach to the council and then decided that they were not going to engage at all with the council, seeing it as an equally flawed institution. The new administration came in and decided that it was that they did also see it as a flawed institution, but that they were going to take a different approach and try to change it from within. And so this spring, the U.S. ran for a seat on the council and won a seat. So this past September was the first, in June we were officially became members, and in September was the first substantive session where the U.S. actively participated. And so, for example, my office, we sent our paralegal and two of our attorneys to Geneva to be on the delegation, and then all of us in Washington were backing them up. And so the way it works when they're negotiating a resolution, there will be the point person in Geneva will send back the text of the resolution and feedback on how the negotiations are going to us back in Washington, and we'll advise on changes that we'd like to see made, things that we're okay with, and what other countries we think we should work with. So my office advises both from Washington, but also we're right there, often right in the negotiations, and actually working with the delegations in the field. We also represent the U.S. government before the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, and where individuals can bring complaints against the U.S. government. We also represent the department or the U.S. government before special rapporteurs, which is a special mechanism you may know at the UN, also coming out of the Human Rights Council. They're independent experts on subject matter, such as there's a special rapporteur on torture, a special rapporteur on human rights while countering terrorism. And we work with those to answer their inquiries about the United States and our compliance with our international obligations. My office is also responsible for coordinating the drafting of the U.S. treaty reports. We're a party to several international human rights treaties, for example, the International Convention on Civil and Political Rights, the Convention Against Torture, and these treaties have treaty bodies that monitor state compliance with it, and they also have reporting requirements, where states have to do periodic reports going through article by article the conventions and saying how we comply with them. And there's usually a written component to that report and then an oral defense. And my office serves as the drafting and coordinating function of that, which requires coordination with all aspects, not only of the federal government, but to a large extent with state governments as well, because often there will be questions about compliance of states with international conventions, and we sometimes need to reach out to them, and we'll try to have at least one state representative on our delegation when we're going to defend the reports before the treaty body. That's.
Can you say something
sure.
about your own path? I mean, what have you always wanted to work in the government? What did you do your first summer? What did you do?
Sure.
And during law school to position yourself?
Well, as I said, my first summer I worked for Professor Howard as a research assistant. I also worked during the academic
year.
Can I ask
you a question about that?
Sure.
I mean, was that strategic on your part? Did you work with Professor Howard because you knew that he does comparative constitutional work, or was it because he's the person who answered your request first? I mean, what?
No. Well, I knew coming in that I wanted to do. I wanted to do public interest law, and I was primarily interested in international law as well. And so I never did the I never applied to a law firm. I never did the law firm process either as a 1L or 2L, or when I was applying for a job as a 3L. So my first year, the looking at what some of the options were in terms of going and finding an internship with an NGO or potentially with the government or potentially with a professor as a research assistant. And I just decided that I was interested in staying in Charlottesville and was interested in working closely with a professor. And I particularly was drawn to working with Professor Howard because at the time he was focusing part of his research on looking at how international law was being incorporated into constitutions. And so thought that was something that was a topic that I was interested in working on. So that was the logic behind that choice. My second year, I applied to some government organizations and to some non-government organizations, and received some offers, and decided the one that I was going to take was to work for the South Asia Human Rights Documentation Center in New Delhi, which turned out to be an interesting experience. The center is run by a gentleman named Ravi Nair, who used to be on the... He's a gentleman from India who lived for a number of years in the UK and was actually on the secretariat of Amnesty International. And he had returned to New Delhi to start a human rights organization there. And what the South Asia Human Rights Documentation Center largely does is, as its name might suggest, to document human rights abuses throughout South Asia. It also works a lot with training local NGOs on how to use the UN system and the like. And my experience there was kind of a little bit of which I think you may find a lot in working with NGOs, where you're kind of thrown in and you're the able body, and what they need is what you're going to do. And so the year that I started, Ravi had just gotten a brand new building that the Ford Foundation had donated money for. And so he was very excited that he had all this extra space. And so he was a little overambitious in the number of interns, both from the United States and other countries, that he invited. And I think throughout the course of the summer, we counted there was probably about 24 of us total. And it's a very, I mean, it's there was Ravi at the time, his one kind of deputy, and maybe two or three other local staff. And here you have, we're descending upon him, these 24 gung-ho, ready-to-go, you know, law students from around the world. And so I arrived the second week. There were a few people who arrived before me. I arrived the second week, and by the third week, I was asked by Ravi to come in when he was meeting the next kind of group of interns that were coming in. And so I sat there, and I thought, oh, he just wants somebody to show them the ropes. And through his discussion, he turns to me and introduces me as the intern coordinator. Having been there all of 1 week, I mean, I basically had just figured out how to give, you know, the rickshaw drivers the directions to how to get to this little building, and they kept saying to me, no, you don't want to go to that neighborhood, and I kept saying, yeah, I really do want to go to that neighborhood. And so I just kind of figured that out, and now all of a sudden I was the intern coordinator. So thankfully, my fellow interns were very good-natured about it, and of course called me boss lady for the rest of the summer. So I ended up spending that summer basically coordinating what everyone else did, which was actually a great experience because it had me the opportunity to touch on what everyone else was researching and was looking at. So when I came back third year, of course, then graduation was looming, and a lot of my friends were coming back and just worked for a law firm and had that offer and were ready to cruise their third year, and I thought, okay, what am I going to do? And so I did actually talk to Ravi and Ryan Goodman, who some of you may know from Human Rights Work, would work with Ravi and was working with Ravi at the time, and talked with them about possibly going back and working with Ravi after school, but then thought I'd better also try to, I've got some student loans packing, building up, and so better go and try to see, you know, apply within the United States, so maybe a little bit more of a stable position, at least funding-wise. And so I applied to the Department of Justice, to their honors program, and to the State Department, as well as a couple NGOs, and got offers from the State Department and from the Department of Justice. And the Department of Justice, I was looking especially at their Executive Office of Immigration Review, because I was interested in protection issues in refugee and asylum work, and then with the State Department. And so I took the offer with the State Department, and as I said, when you first start, you really don't have control of what you do. So I started off in the employment law section. And there, I was the primary advisor to the medical director of the Foreign Service. Some of you may know how the Foreign Service works, but there is a medical director who's responsible, in the first instance, for medical care for all of our Foreign Service officers around the world. And so I was a primary legal advisor to him at the time, and also did a lot of work with disability law within the Department of State, also a lot of EEOC, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission work within the department. And my path kind of took, I don't want to run up with everyone's time, but my path kind of took a little bit of a diversion, and I ended up actually in Charleston, South Carolina for a couple years, working also for the Department of State. But then after having been there for about 4 years, decided that it was about time I started doing what I really went to the department to do, which was human rights and refugee work. And so then requested a rotation and ended up where I am. So that's kind of how I ended up where I am. But I'm happy to talk more, but I don't want to take up my colleagues' time.
Thanks, Elizabeth. We'll be able to get some more specifics with Elizabeth afterwards. Mark Bromley graduated from UVA in 95, right?
Yes.
And he also has a Bachelor's of Foreign Service. What's BSF?
Bachelor's of Science of Foreign Service.
Which is a science.
BSF.
Exactly.
Which somehow you can get without ever taking a science course.
So I don't know when you graduated, but Susan went there in 2000 you graduated? Mm-hmm. So you were probably 91 or 92.
90.
He's an old guy. So Mark worked for more than 11 years at Global Rights, which was called the International Human Rights Law Group when he first went there in 95, I guess. So he served in a number of program management positions for Global Rights. During his tenure there, he coordinated donor relations, helped open field offices in Bosnia and Herzegovina, in Burundi, in Morocco, Nigeria, India. And in 2005, he launched an organization-wide lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex initiative, which has been very effective and has worked particularly in the human rights. In the UN human rights system. He both at Global Rights and then I think also subsequently with the Council for Global Equality, which is the organization that he helped to launch in 2000.
A year ago.
Only a year ago?
Well, I've been working on it for 2 years, but officially a year ago.
It feels like a lot longer. Well, the Council for, he'll tell you more, obviously, but the organization exists to pursue a clearer and stronger U.S. Voice on international lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and human rights concerns. So in Global Rights and in the Council for Global Equality, he has been monitoring or participated in the monitoring of developments within the U.N. human rights system. He's conducted research on sexual violence in support of the international tribunals for Rwanda and the former Yugoslavia. He's reviewed international law standards in international legal briefs, in legal briefs by Global Rights, as Amicus Curiae, in human rights cases before the U.S. and international courts. And I want to also mention that for a year, Mark took a detour or just a sabbatical is probably a better way to put it, and served as foreign policy fellow in the office of U.S. Senator Russ Feingold when he staffed Senator Feingold's work on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, including the senator's chairmanship of the Africa Subcommittee. So he has also done some teaching. He's done some stints of teaching, including as an adjunct for the Human Rights Clinic when I first started it. He was coming down to work with us. Thanks, Mark.
Great. Thanks. It's great to be here. And even though it's busy in D.C. right now, it's always delightful to come down here in the fall because it's such a beautiful drive. So great to be here. So I guess what I thought I could do is start off with sort of my career path, but with a focus on, you know, some of the detours and or tips I've picked up along the way that seemed helpful. And then, of course, I think questions and answers will be more interesting. But as Dina mentioned, to start out where I am now and then go backward, I started my own nonprofit organization about a year ago called the Council for Global Equality. I've been working on it for about 2 years, but it sort of launched officially with a website, which means you're official, I guess, a year ago. We are a coalition of most of the domestic gay rights advocacy organizations, so Human Rights Campaign, National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, Immigration Equality, a bunch of the human rights civil rights LGBT organizations, as well as we're also made up of the international human rights groups, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, those sorts of folks, who do work on lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender issues internationally as human rights concerns. And so we come together through this organization of the Council to encourage the U.S. government, through the State Department, through U.S. embassies, through Congress, through the White House, to speak out and support LGBT issues as serious human rights concerns. So that is great fun, and I'll talk, and we're making some real progress, I think, and I'll talk a little bit about what I do at the Council, because I think it shows sort of the variety of human rights directions you can take in Washington, let alone the rest of the world. But maybe I'll backtrack first and start out with what got me there, and then talk a little bit about what I'm doing now. So in law school, the first thing I'd say, as you probably all know, is your summers in law school are great opportunities to get some experience, to get to know people, to figure out what you really want to do in the world after you graduate. I really used my summers to focus on international experiences. I came to law school very much wanting to do international human rights work. So I used the summer opportunities to go abroad and do some of that work. My first summer, I went to Ukraine and worked with an environmental group in Ukraine that was doing environmental human rights work. It was an incredibly interesting time to be in Ukraine, but unfortunately, the situation in Ukraine at that point was so chaotic and civil society so nascent that it was really hard to get much work done. I mean, I tried to help them quite a bit, but it was a difficult time in Ukraine when just not a lot was happening. But it was still a great experience. I came back. My second summer was fantastic. I spent the summer in Thailand on the Thai-Burma border with some other UVA folks who've probably been down here to speak recently, Katie Redford and Tyler Giannini. They went on to found Earth Rights International, which hopefully you've heard of, which is a great nonprofit organization that has been suing oil companies and multinational corporations for human rights abuses worldwide. And they won a fantastic case in Burma for slave labor against UNICAL. Anyway, I spent a summer on the Thai-Burma border actually doing human rights work, which was fantastic and great experience. But during law school, I was also at various points really engaged with Haitian refugees. So I graduated from the law school in 95. In those sort of 93, 94, 95 period was the period when we were seeing various waves of Haitian refugees coming ashore or being picked up at sea by the U.S. Coast Guard. The refugee policy kept changing. At one point, Haitians were getting to the U.S., then we were picking them up at sea and taking them to Guantanamo, if you remember Guantanamo's earlier and equally questionable reputation. It was a source of housing for Haitian refugees. Anyway, I was going to law school during the various periods of the Haitian refugee crisis, and the law school here was really supportive in helping a group of us do refugee asylum work on behalf of Haitian refugees. So for almost, I think, every spring break I was here, we actually went down to Miami and volunteered to do Haitian asylum claims with some of the refugee groups down in Miami. My third year in law school, I actually got some funding from the law school and went to Haiti, because at one of the points in the various iterations of our refugee policy, we actually decided that it was safer to try to screen Haitians who needed refuge internally. And so there was an internal screening process that existed, but it was a very difficult process because it was very hard for anyone who truly needed asylum or refugee protection to actually get to the U.S. Embassy to apply for that protection. So we were actually able to go and work with some other volunteers to do refugee interviews in Port-au-Prince in Haiti in sort of clandestine locations, so folks didn't actually have to come out and go to the embassy and risk being detected. But anyway, that those were some really great opportunities I had, and I think the law school was very generous in affording me those opportunities. They did provide some funding for some of those, so I don't know if anyone's asked the dean lately, but the dean did give us discretionary money to do some of that work, so consider that. And I also used my time as much as I could to get involved with human rights groups in Washington, D.C. I knew that I wanted to make Washington ultimately my home. I wanted to do international human rights work, but be based in Washington eventually. And so I made a real effort to try to get to know the human rights groups in Washington. And in fact, my third year of law school, I actually did an internship with Human Rights First in Washington, D.C., and would sort of take classes here for 3 days and drive up there for 2 days. I don't know if you're supposed to actually do that, but anyway,
I did. It's called an externship.
Okay. And actually, I think now they have made it easier to do formal externships where you can actually take a semester and go work for a nonprofit organization, work for the State Department. For example, my husband is actually also in the legal advisor's office at State Department, and he did an externship there for one of his semesters, his third year, which was a great way to get experience and get to know people.
That's called external studies here.
Okay.
No, please.
I only know how I maneuvered the system. I don't know what it's actually called. I think a lot of this is common sense, right? Particularly in the international human rights world, it's getting to be a bigger community, but it's still not a huge community. People know each other. The more that you can get to know the folks doing this work and impress them with the fact that you're dedicated and smart and hardworking, then the more likely they are to keep an eye out for you when jobs become available. The more likely they are to give you a shot when there's that job that you really should have 2 years of experience for, but they know you, they might vouch for you. It just makes a huge difference to try to get to know these folks. And, the reality is, particularly in the nonprofit world, we don't have the system or the resources, really, for sort of the more formal corporate legal mentoring process. So much of it is, so much of the governance of NGOs, the hiring decisions, the mentoring is just on the fly. And it really means, you've got to get out there and meet the people who are going to be making those decisions and giving you the opportunities that you want. And law school, as busy as it seems, is a great opportunity to actually get out there and do some of that work and get to know those people and figure out what you want to do. So after law school, because I'd been doing a lot of this work with Haitian refugees, and at that point had actually been down to Haiti a couple of times, I ended up, after law school, going to work for one of the best Haitian NGOs that does human rights work. So it's a local Haitian NGO, had been started by a group of Haitians in New York, but was in the process of becoming a fully local NGO in Port-au-Prince. I went down there to work with them. This was right after Aristide came back to Haiti. It was an exciting time. There was a lot going on, a lot of promise at the time, which unfortunately was squandered, I think. But it was an exciting time to be there. There was a lot of discussion about rule of law and how you reestablish a judiciary and a legal system in a country that had just been decimated. So that was a great opportunity. But I ultimately knew I wanted to come back up to Washington. That's where my partner and I have been based in Washington since I went to Georgetown. So that I always knew would be home. And while I was down in Haiti, because I had been an intern with Human Rights First and also spent some time getting to know some of the other human rights folks, I actually got a call from the woman, Gay McDougall, who ran the International Human Rights Law Group, then called Global Rights, and asked if I would come up and take a job because she needed to fill a position doing sort of special research projects. And that was fantastic. I thought it would actually take quite a bit longer to sort of work my way back to D.C., But I got this opportunity to come back and ended up being at Global Rights for about 11 years in all sorts of positions, starting an office in Bosnia right after the war, and Dina actually ended up running our office in Sarajevo for a while, so our friendship goes back to working together in and out of Sarajevo. Ended up starting some of our programs in West Africa, did a lot of our research at Global Rights for UN work, UN engagement, just sort of reviewed all of our briefs for all of our amicus briefs in sort of international human rights cases. It was a great position, a great job. Special projects meant sort of I could do anything or everything, but a great opportunity to do a lot. Then one of the things that Dina mentioned, I realized that both because of my own interest, but also because nobody else was doing it, that I really wanted to start an LGBTI program, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex program at Global Rights. I thought it was a good fit because Global Rights really came to specialize in supporting technically and somewhat financially local human rights groups, particularly in real sort of post-conflict or post-human rights crisis situations. And Global Rights would support those groups to help them, to empower them to sort of be a part of the reconstruction and the human rights dialogue after conflict. And I thought it was important in those situations to also make sure Global Rights affiliates and Global Rights offices were working on and identifying and supporting LGBT activists and human rights defenders. So I had an opportunity to start this program at Global Rights, which was wonderful and still exists today and does a lot of UN work and OAS work at the Organization of American States. But after doing that, I came to realize that the one of the things that was troubling me was, unfortunately, under the last presidential administration, the U.S. government was not taking a leadership role on LGBT issues as human rights concerns. In fact, probably not surprising to many folks, the U.S. government was actually hindering any discussion of LGBT issues as legitimate human rights concerns in many international fora. And I found that really troubling. And I was equally troubled that the LGBT community in the U.S. and the advocacy organizations in the U.S. didn't know about these positions the U.S. government was taking at international fora. And that makes sense, right? I mean, there's so many civil rights battles to be waged and won domestically. But still, the U.S. government was taking these positions that were harmful to LGBT communities abroad, and nobody was really holding them to account for it. And that bothered me. So that's where I came up with the idea for Council for Global Equality. Started working on it 2 years ago. It sort of was up and running last year. Right now at the council, I'll just briefly sort of talk about all the different areas just in short words, so you know the variety of sort of advocacy activities out there in Washington in particular. So we work with Congress to bring attention to these issues. We do some formal lobbying to get our concerns into congressional spending bills and authorization bills, an authorization bill for the State Department, for example. We work with the National Security Council to make sure that they're reviewing sort of LGBT trends as part of our human rights concern, particularly now in Africa, where there have been some real concerns about criminal laws that are coming into force in Africa. And we work with the State Department very closely, with the Human Rights Bureau, to make sure that they're reporting on human rights issues, includes LGBT issues. And with U.S. embassies to make sure that they're reaching out to LGBT communities abroad as legitimate civil society actors in the same way that we reach out to women's rights groups or disability rights groups or a whole category of civil society actors. So there's even in Washington, there's a whole range of really fantastic human rights advocacy engagement to be done. So with that, I will.
Thanks, Mark. Mark, were you in Vigil?
I was on Vigil, yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure because Susan was too. So Susan Sajadi received her degree from here in 2005, where she was a member of the Articles Review Board of Vigil. She also has her BS degree in Foreign Service. She's a scientist cum laude. from Georgetown School of Foreign Service in 2000. And her work was on human rights standards, universal human rights standards in Africa also. So, interesting. Before her legal career, Susan was a journalist and worked with the Wall Street Journal and the Oxford Business Group in Istanbul, in Turkey, and she's also fluent in Farsi. So before her current work with Burke O'Neill, which is a small law firm that's based in Charlottesville and now in Washington, Susan was an associate at Sibley Austin. So she went from big to, from the big firm world to the boutique. And at Sibley Austin, she worked in a general litigation practice in the capital markets group. So that's pretty different. She represented major financial institutions, hedge funds, and pharmaceutical companies. So she got in, you know, on the other side. Kind of the room. And she also, importantly, participated in pro bono, extensively, in pro bono projects. And she can tell you a little bit about her successes with asylum cases. Now she is working with Burke O'Neill, as I mentioned, started in June of this year, where she focuses on general, commercial, and complex civil litigation. She's working currently on cases against KBR Halliburton, and also on the case against Blackwater for the murder of Iraqis in the Nisr Square and some other shootings in Iraq, which the clinic is working with also.
Thank you for your support. Yeah.
Well, so I, you know, as Dina said, I went to Georgetown and graduated in 2000. I was in the School of Foreign Service, so I always had an interest in international things. And that wasn't necessarily international human rights from the get-go, but during my senior year, I wrote my thesis on international human rights standards in Africa and female genital circumcision specifically, which is kind of a gory subject, but interesting nonetheless, and sort of, you know, opened my eyes to a lot of the institutions and non-NGOs in D.C. that were very helpful with that. I didn't know that I wanted to go to law school. I didn't really know what I wanted to do, which is sort of a theme to my career path, generally, as you can tell from my resume. So I graduated from Georgetown. I decided to go to Japan and teach English with the JET program, which is where the Japanese government basically hires teachers from, or students from America and Great Britain, sometimes Australia, to come there and teach English. So I was in a... I wanted to be in Tokyo, but I got assigned to a very small rice paddy community. I was the only foreigner. There was no restaurants. I was in the middle of nowhere in Japan for a year. And that actually surprisingly opened my eyes up to some other human rights issues that I had never thought about. I was a teacher in a middle school there that was in, as I said, a very rural community, and there was a lot of corporal punishment. I mean, like, the teachers would just be... crap out of the students all the time. And I saw this, and it was just, you know, coming from our school systems, and I was surprised to see that corporal punishment actually is allowed in some school systems in America. You know, it sort of got me thinking. I had been interested in law school. I had taken the LSAT, but I just wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. So I came back from Japan, and then September 11th happened. And I personally just became very interested in some of the ways that the media was portraying what was going on in the Middle East and the Arab media coverage of what was going on over here. So on a little bit of a whim, I decided to move to Istanbul. I had a friend that lived there, and she said, you know, you can come live in my apartment. I said, great. So I went over there and basically started pounding the pavement. I got a list of all of the, you know, news organizations in Istanbul, and I started calling them. And one thing I found out, which is, I think is a, just a good piece of advice, is that people love to talk about themselves, and no one says no to a cup of coffee. So I went down the entire list, and there was like 40 organizations that I went through. By the time I got to W, so imagine what I had to go through, I hit the Wall Street Journal, and there was a gentleman there by the name of Hugh Pope, and you know, I went and had coffee with him, and it was right at the time of the Daniel Pearl, when Daniel Pearl went missing in Pakistan. And as you might remember, he was the Wall Street Journal reporter that ended up being killed. And so it was right around that time, and he was just a hectic time for them, and he needed some help, and he said, hey, you know, why don't you come on board? I said, great. So I came on board and started helping him research. That was part-time. Then I also got a job with the Oxford Business Group, And with them, I got to travel to Egypt and Lebanon and around the Middle East right after September 11th. It was just the most fascinating time to be there. And you could see, you know, so many other human rights issues. I mean, you know, you could talk, you know, you'd be driving around in Lebanon with a cab driver that would be telling you about, you know, how his family's land got taken, you know, in Israel and all this stuff. And it was just, you know, it was very different to sort of get a firsthand perspective of it. So I decided, okay, I'm going to go to law school. I want to make a difference in something. I don't really know, again, what I want to do. So I showed up here. You know, I took a wide array of classes, and I was interested in both corporate and litigation, which I know sounds a little bit crazy, and I know that most people come here and say, I definitely want to do corporate work, or I definitely want to, you know, do litigation. And I can say I didn't really know. I mean, I was the victim of a liberal arts education, where I was just interested in everything and didn't know what I wanted to do. So my summer after my first year, I was lucky enough to get a summer associate position at Kay Scholer in D.C., and I did a lot of national security law work there, which I thought was really interesting, because I think everything's interesting. And then I came back my second year, and I thought, you know, maybe I want to go to D.C. Maybe I want to go to New York. I'm not really sure. So I got a job my second year summer at Sidley Austin in New York. And I went there, and honestly, you know, I was really torn between both the corporate and litigation sides. I saw, you know, interesting aspects of both of them. I saw that, you know, there was international aspects to both of them, you know, whether it be the corporate transactional work, you know, where you're, you know, doing it in all sorts of different countries, or the litigation side of it. So after graduation, I made the decision. I also had a huge student loan debt to go to a big law firm and to, you know, to try my hand at it. And I ended up in the capital markets group at Sidley, which is what I had requested. I had a great mentor there. And he said, you know, it doesn't really matter what you want to do or what you're going to figure it out, but there is something to be said about, you know, some of the resources at a big law firm and some of the mentorship that you're going to get there. So I, you know, I started out in the capital markets group, and I realized quickly it wasn't for me. You know, I was sort of looking around, and I was like, my God, everyone's working all the time. It's just really deal-driven. And I didn't have a problem working a lot. I just didn't really like the work that I was doing. And, you know, I did a lot of Australian underwriting work, which meant that my clients were in Australia, I was in New York, and my partner that I was working for was in London. So international law for me at that point meant just being awake all the time. And, you know, that, again, wasn't quite what I was looking for. So I realized early on, you know, I don't know if this is the type of work that I want to do. And frankly, I also looked around that group and saw that there weren't any female partners and there weren't any female senior associates. And it just sort of scared me a little bit. So I got involved with some of the pro bono work about 3 months into my time at Sidley with a Haitian refugee, actually, who had, you know, come over on a boat to Florida and had this just horrific story. I ended up, just because the woman that I was working with was a litigation associate, she ended up leaving the firm. So all of a sudden, I became the lead associate on the case. There was a partner, but he wasn't, you know, he was sort of tied up with some of his own things. So as a corporate associate, you know, I went to court and argued on behalf of him and, you know, did all this stuff. And we won, which was just, for me, you know, an amazing victory, even though a small one, perhaps, but we were super excited. And from there, I thought, you know, here I am at this big law firm that does have all of these pro bono opportunities here. I should at least, you know, make use of that and try to figure out what I want to do from there. So there was another case with an Afghan woman who had come over here. Her family was killed by the Taliban. She got pregnant while she was here, so she had, you know, she really had nowhere to go. So we got asylum for her as well, which was also very exciting. And there were a couple other, you know, smaller cases that I worked on as well, but those were sort of my two big, you know, things that I was most excited about. And after about 2 years in the capital markets group, I thought that I had built enough of a reputation for myself to ask to be switched to another group because I realized this wasn't quite for me. So despite the fact that I got to travel around quite a bit, I was in Australia for several months, all of that was really exciting. I thought that in the end, you know, I'd be best served doing something that I was more interested in long term. So I asked to be switched to the litigation group, and they said yes, which was great. And one of the benefits I would say of going to a big firm that does have strong corporate and litigation groups is that if you don't know what you want to do and you have, you know, you've proven that you can do the work and you've got to, you know, they'll let you usually switch. And I know that's changed a little bit in this market where they're just laying off people, but I would say overall, you know, that is something just to think about. So I did litigation, and as Dina said, you know, I did a lot of hedge funds. It was a Bear Stearns collapse. We were doing a lot of that work. And I thought, okay, you know, I found something that I want to do, and I sort of came up with a plan for myself. I was like, you know, I can do this for a couple years, pay off some more debts, and then go into, you know, maybe a nonprofit or, you know, something along those lines. And I was really interested in the asylum and refugee work that I had been doing. And I, you know, as I said, I kept doing that. So, but then my fiancé at the time, who's also an associate, he was associate at Simpson Thatcher in New York, decided that we wanted to move to Charlottesville. So he got a job here, which was sort of out of the blue, and we moved to Charlottesville. And here I was again, you know, I thought I had figured out what I want to do, but I'm in this admittedly small town. So how am I going to do the things that I want to do? And again, you know, basically I started pounding the pavement. I got a list of all the law firms. I called them up. I found all the UVA alums that I could. And it's a bad job market. It was a bad job market. This happened all last year. So it was a very bad job market. You know, but I was like, I'm willing to work for free. What do you want me to do? You know, I was looking around. And I actually emailed Dina at one point and said, you know, do you know anybody anywhere that needs any help with anything? And she said, you know, there is this one firm, Burke O'Neill. You know, I don't know if they're hiring, probably not, but just, you know, send them an email. So I did. I emailed Bill Gould, who's actually teaches trial advocacy here as well. And he didn't respond. And I emailed him again, and he didn't respond. And it was just sort of this, like, well, I'm just going to keep harassing him. And one of these days, you know, he's either going to call the police or he's going to respond. And he responded, finally. And he said, look, we're having this presentation at the law school. You should just, you know, you should come by. And they were doing a presentation on Abu Ghraib, which is how Burke O'Neill started. And so I went, and I just, a little bit of persistence, I talked to Susan Burke that night, who started the firm. And her sister, Elizabeth Burke, is also part of the firm, and Elizabeth's husband is Bill Gould. So it was this whole family that I didn't realize. They don't say they're a family on the website, but they are a family. and, you know, literally the next week she called me and said, you know, we weren't thinking of hiring a new associate, but, you know, we met you, and, you know, would you be interested in starting with us? And there's an office in D.C. Where everything is based, and there's a small office in Charlottesville in the downtown mall. And it's worked out great. I mean, what Burke O'Neill does, we have a fairly robust healthcare practice, and that's how we can pay for all the other, you know, human rights work that we're doing. The two big cases that I'm working on is the case against KBR and Halliburton, which is basically, they're basically the defense contractors. They're in charge of all the sanitation services at a lot of bases around the world. We've limited ourselves to Iraq and Afghanistan. And instead of actually disposing of things properly, they've built these enormous open-air burn pits where they burn just everything that you can imagine, from human body parts to, you know, aircraft hangars and parts of Humvees. And the smoke is just blowing into the base all day long. And a lot of our servicemen and women have come back with all sorts of diseases on the best end of the spectrum. They have, you know, asthma and respiratory illnesses. On the most extreme end, a lot of them have died from rare forms of leukemia that we can trace back to paint solvents that have been burned. So that's, you know, that's a big case that's going on now. And the other one that's gotten a lot more media attention is a little bit more, I don't want to say interesting, but it has gotten a little bit more media attention, is the case against Blackwater. Blackwater, as John knows, they are the private security contractors that were hired by the State Department to provide security for State Department diplomats that were in Iraq. And I don't want to say too much about the case because it's still very live and active. And again, State Department sitting next to me. but basically, we've brought cases against them on behalf of Iraqi families and their estates who've been murdered in Nisour Square and other shootings around Iraq and Afghanistan. So that's a very sort of long, convoluted way of how I got from where I started to where I am. A very non-traditional path, I will say. I didn't wake up, you know, and know that I wanted to do human rights law. It was something that I was always interested in. But I think sort of a take-home point is that you need to be persistent, and it is a very small community, and you sort of just need to pound the pavement as much as you can. And it's very, I understand it's difficult, and you will feel defeated, and that's just, you know, that's part of it. But there are, you know, there are a lot of people out there that are willing to help, that, you know, that want you to be a part of this, that appreciate the excitement and enthusiasm, I think, that a lot of you have. So, you know, don't lose sight of that, you know, in this crazy job market.